We are the council. And she waved me away. 11. I lay awake for hours after my visit to the Nafafa hub, going over every unbelievable detail in my mind and trying to figure out what exactly I should do. The trouble was, those council kids had made it crystal clear I didn't actually have a choice. It was pass their test or lose the links forever, and that was that. Well, if I had to join their club, at the very least I could set up rock-solid boundaries. Camp Pillow Fort was a network of two, and it was going to stay that way. The rest of them could have 64 links and all the kids they wanted, but Abby and I only needed each other. I stared into the darkness of Fort Comfy, trying to imagine everything that could possibly go wrong in advance. And when I finally did fall asleep, my dreams were full of locked doors, dusty halls, broken mirrors, and creepy children singing songs about licorice. So it was a rough start to the morning when Abby crowded into the fort, tickled me awake, and demanded I do my duty as vice director and lead a proper morning roll call. "Director Samson," I said, losing a battle with a yawn. I'd barely gotten any sleep, and I felt all bleary and blotchy next to Abby, who was unfairly bright-eyed and shiny-haired and raring to get on with the day. "Probably napping on the back porch," said Abby. "So, absent." "Hernandez, Abby." "Hesitant." Abby punched the air.
"And Hetzger Maggie."
Another yawn. "Pleasant." Abby poked me in the ribs. "Is that the best you can do?" I propped myself up on one elbow and rubbed the sleep out of my eyes. "I've got something to tell you." "Cool. But first," said Abby, "can we make it a plan to come up with a camp dance today? It was one of the very best parts about Camp Cantaloupe, and I think we've been overlooking it." "If you want," I said. "But you really, really need to hear this." I told her every detail of my adventure, from the hub kids to the first sofa to the council's ultimatum. Abby listened, her eyebrows inching higher with every word. "So, we actually have a lot to do today," I concluded, "because this is day one, and if we don't get this done by day three, we'll lose the links for good." Abby stared at me. "Wow, Maggles. I am impressed." "Huh? You must have been awake all night making that up." "What? No, I didn't." "We should still focus on our summer camp setup, since we've put so much time into it. But we could work this new game in around the sides, maybe. Who did you want to pretend to be the council?" "Hello," I said, waving at her. "This isn't a joke. This isn't a game. This is real. It's happening. And we need to get started." "Dude, it's okay," said Abby. "You don't have to try so hard. I'll play along." "No, I do have to try so hard because you're still not getting it." I sat up and looked her dead in the eyes. "This is not a game. I'm not kidding." Abby blinked, the smile sliding from her face. "You're not?" "Not even a little." "But, Megs, come on, you have to be. I mean, all that secret room mysterious key stuff, it's totally you. It's the exact kind of story you would stay awake all night dreaming up." "I know. But I swear I didn't," I said. "Look, I'm the one who went. I know what happened, and you don't. You're in no position to argue here." "Well," Abby looked around the fort, "do you at least have some proof or something, like a souvenir or a mark on a pillow?" Shoot. I'd been hoping she wouldn't ask that. "No," I admitted. "I don't. Carolina came in through the blue plaid pillow in my fort, but it doesn't lead anywhere now. I checked as soon as she brought me back." "Huh." Abby crawled past me through the link to Fort McForderson. I followed, watching as she pulled the pillow free, studied both sides carefully, and tapped the chair legs behind it. It all looked so mundane and normal in the morning light. "You're absolutely sure it was this one?" "Positive. You'd remember if it happened to you." She sat back, chewing her lip. Mags, I'm sorry. I mean, without any proof, and it's so much like one of your... just... I don't know. Her eyes flicked to my face, then away. I'm, gonna go brush my teeth. She headed back to her fort. I slumped against the side of the sofa. New Abby was out in full force. I was deciding the best way to tell her exactly how moose-headed she was being when there was a shout from Fort Comfy. Look! Abby yelled, bursting back through the link. Look, 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 look! She held out a large silver envelope. It's got my name on it. I swear, this was not there when we crawled through a second ago. What's inside? I asked. Abby pulled out a square of heavy paper and scanned it, her eyes going so wide she looked like a cartoon character. Well, I demanded, what's it say? It says, Dear Abby Hernandez, Maggie Hetzker is telling the truth. Signed, the Council of Nefafa. There was a very satisfying silence. But how? Abby said, shaking the envelope. How did they get this in my fort? No idea. I was having the hardest time not grinning from ear to ear. It was a nice feeling being right. But Noriko did say they'd help if I had trouble convincing you. This must be their way of doing it. Unbelievable. Abby stared down at the note, then looked up. Wait, so does that mean they can hear everything we're saying? It looks like it. They told me they monitor all linked fort activity. But it's probably way too late to worry about that now. This is just so bizarre. I mean, this changes everything. You have no idea. Will you tell me the whole thing again, Mags? From the start? I want to make sure I really understand what's going on. I promise I'll pay attention this time. Oh, thanks so much, I said. Okay. I repeated the story, making sure to include every tiny detail, and Abby listened closely. So there was a piece of the first sofa in that quilt I used to make your scarf? She said when I finished. That is so cool! I basically started this whole thing! Well, the fact that I built a pillow fort might have helped some. But it took my scarf to make the fort link! By our powers combined, then. And so now we have 3 days to pull off a good deed, or it's all over? Yep. No problem. Abby slapped the note against her palm. Getting in will be easy. I mean, it's us. And then we'll have so many more people to hang out with. It'll be just like back at camp. My happiness at finally convincing her I was telling the truth vanished with a pop. Whoa. My whole reason for joining Nefafa was so we could save our links and get access to all those new ones for better-than-ever games. Games that needed a Maggie and an Abby and no one else. Sure, I would have to go to council meetings sometimes, and there was probably some sort of newsletter I'd have to read. But I could manage all that and still have the time of my life with my best friend. Only it sounded like Abby wanted to join Nefafa so she could hang out with new kids, just like she did at Camp Cantaloupe. That meant the sooner we did our good deed and joined, the sooner she could dive into that kid-packed maze on the floor of the hub. It was completely unfair. I'd only just gotten Abby back. I wasn't ready to start sharing her again. Why couldn't things just be the way they used to be? Good thing I still had 3 whole days to think of a solution. So, hey, let's do this, said Abby. I'm guessing you were up all night and have, like, 17 good deeds planned out already, right? I blinked. She was right. Old Maggie would have had this mission drawn up, scripted, and set to music by now. But I hadn't even thought once about the good deed part of the quest. Let's brainstorm ideas together, I said, playing for time. We've got days to work with here. There's no rush. Oh, no, said Abby. I think we should get it. But she cut off as a loud knocking came through from Fort Comfy. Oh, whale poop, Abby said, her wide eyes mirroring mine. We dove back through the link. There you are, said Alex as we scrambled out into Abby's bedroom. What took you so long? I've been knocking for half a minute. I said. said Abby.
Well, never mind, said Alex.
Maggie, your mom called.
Who? I said, still slightly panicked. Alex smiled.
Your mom, the lady who lives next door. She'd like you to come home after breakfast. She wants to check in about a few things before she leaves for work.
Oh, okay. I was surprised. It wasn't like my mom to call and check on me. Then I remembered she hadn't actually seen me in almost 2 days. Abby and I got dressed while Alex made scrambled eggs and orange juice, and after helping with the dishes, we headed over to my place. My mom was folding laundry at the dining room table.
Hi, sweetie, she said, flapping out a pair of jeans as we came in.
You forgot to leave a note last night.
Sorry, I said. I was only next door.
I know. That's why I called you there.
Hi, Abby.
Nice braid.
Thanks, Miss Hetzger. How was your time at camp?
It was great, said Abby. I wish Maggie could have gone.
I took advantage of the moment to give my mom a pointed look. But she had a towel tucked under her chin and didn't see.
Glad to hear it, she said. Maggie, I'm leaving for work pretty soon here. I picked up groceries last night, so there's plenty of food in the fridge. Make sure you eat a salad or something healthy for lunch, okay?
Okay. Will you be around later? I asked.
It was great having all this parent-free time to spend with Abby.
But I didn't mind my mom being around sometimes. My mom shook her head.
We're stretched thin on staffing this week, so I'm covering shifts where I can.
She noticed my expression.
I'm sorry, but you know I can't always be around just because you want me to be. Remember, you're almost in middle school now, and I'm proud of how mature and responsible you are at taking care of yourself and our home. And speaking of, I need you to give the whole house a good clean this afternoon.
I failed to suppress a groan.
Hey, no need for that, said my mom. We talked about this. Chores are a part of life. She glanced at her wrist.
See? I'm giving up taking a shower so I can get our laundry folded before I head back out to work.
I don't think asking you to take a few hours out of your vacation to tidy up is too much to ask. She began tugging at a tangle of t-shirts.
Miss Hetzger, said Abby, raising her hand.
We can do it.
What?
My mom and I said together.
We can fold the rest of the laundry, said Abby. That way you'll have time for a shower.
My mom stared at her. Then her face relaxed into a surprised smile.
Thank you, Abby, she said. I'll take you up on that. Pants creased at the seams, please, and socks folded, not rolled.
She headed for the hall, then stopped in the doorway and turned back.
By the way, do you two have a radio or something hidden in that pillow fort?
No, I said, with half a glance at Abby. Why was my mom asking questions about the fort?
I could have sworn I heard noises and talking in there after I hung up the phone with Alex.
Weird, I said, now looking everywhere but at Abby. I picked up a dishcloth and started folding.
You must have imagined it. There's nothing in there that makes sounds.
My mom leaned against the doorframe.
Yeah, I didn't see anything when I went in, but I thought I'd ask.
My head shot up. You went in my pillow fort?
I've been in there before, she said. It's not exactly private property, is it? Although speaking of private property, it was nice to not see any of my things hidden in there this time.
But you can't just... I spluttered.
I think today is actually the perfect time to take it down, as long as you're cleaning the house. You haven't even been in there since Abby got home, and I'd like to have the living room back to normal. My mouth was opening and closing like a fish, but no words were coming out.
We can't take it down for a bit, Miss Hetzger, said Abby quickly. See, we built one at my place, too, and we're playing this, summer camp game with them since Maggie couldn't go to the real one.
Oh.
My mom looked like she wanted to argue, but her eyes flicked to me. The reminder of the Camp Cantaloupe paperwork mix-up seemed to be holding her back.
Well, all right. But take that fort down soon, okay?
Just don't go in there again, I blurted out. Really, I had enough to deal with without her getting involved.
My mom looked a little hurt.
Hey, I'm the parent here, Maggie.
She glanced at her watch.
and I'm about to set a record for world's shortest shower. Her footsteps thudded down the hall as Abby and I turned to the mountain of laundry.
"Why did you say we would fold all this?"
I asked, launching my dish towel back into the heap. For some reason, Abby was grinning.
"Isn't it obvious?" she said. "We're doing a good deed. We should be on the lookout for good deeds all the time from now on. Oh, and you're welcome, by the way, for saving your fort."
I looked over the table.
"A good deed, really? This seems more like a favor to me. I don't know if non-fort-related laundry counts."
"Only one way to find out," said Abby, shrugging.
"Okay, fine," I said. "Just warn me next time you're gonna go all thoughtful and helpful, all right? You made me look selfish in front of my mom."
Abby snort laughed. "You were kinda doing okay at that on your own." I threw a pair of folded socks at her. 10 minutes later, my mom flew by and out the door. And 10 minutes after that, we had all the laundry folded and stacked into neat piles.
"Good deed," said Abby, raising both arms over her head.
She looked around the room.
"Do you think they heard me?"
"How would I know?" I grumbled.
The day wasn't exactly going my way. Why was everybody else trying to run things?
"Better safe than sorry," said Abby. She went over to the fort and stuck her head in the entrance.
"Good deed," she yelled again. "Laundry folded so Maggie's mom could shower before work. Good deed."
I gave her a look as she came back in.
"Oh, stop being grumpy, Mags," said Abby, poking me on the shoulder.
"It doesn't suit you.
Now what's next? More good deeds or cleaning first?"
"We should probably clean," I said reluctantly.
"Then let's go hang out with Uncle Joe. We can brainstorm good deed ideas up there."
"Ooh, good call," said Abby.
"Maybe Joe can..."
She stopped. Her eyes went out of focus. She spun and looked at the fort, then back at me.
"Max," she said, slapping at my arm. "Max, Max, Max, Max!
What? Ow! Why do you do that? I'm right here."
"I've got it. Another good deed. One we can do right now."
"Great," I said, fending her off.
"What?"
"Greens."
"Greens?
Greens!
Are you speaking in code right now?"
"No, I mean greens, like vegetables. And fruit, too, I guess. But greens! For your Uncle Joe. Remember how he said he was craving fresh stuff because he couldn't get any up in Alaska?"
"Yeah."
"So let's make him a big salad for lunch and bring it to him. Your mom said she got plenty of groceries."
"You want to bring a salad?" I said slowly. "For lunch to Alaska. That's your good deed idea."
"Totally," Abby said. She sighed at the look on my face.
"Admit it, Grumpy McGrumperton. It's great."
I shook my head, but my mouth twitched into a smile. There was no way it would work, but it was better than cleaning, and it would give me more time to figure out how to keep the links without losing Abby to all these new kids.
"Fine," I said. "But you're carrying it up through that spinny whirly link."
"Deal," said Abby. She looped her arm through mine and steered me into the kitchen.
"Come on. Time to make the most epic salad the world has ever seen."
12.
"Knock, knock," I called as we crawled out of Fort Orpheus an hour later.
"Hello? Uncle Joe?"
No reply. It looked like he wasn't in.
"He's probably out on the water," Abby said.
"Sweet, that'll make this more of a surprise." We brought our thoughtful good deed salad into the kitchen and went to look out the windows. Things had changed up in Alaska. Instead of a shiny blue sky, a solid bank of gray clouds loomed from one side of the horizon to the other. It was bright and warm in the cabin, but for some reason the sight of that sky made me shiver.
"Look, there he is," said Abby, pointing down to the water's edge. She squinted, then grabbed my arm.
"Hey, I think he's hurt."
I looked where she was pointing. Uncle Joe was limping slowly over the rocks, headed our way. We threw on coats from the closet and ran to meet him. Outside, the wind was blowing hard, making little white caps ripple over the waves. Maybe a storm was coming. Thank goodness we'd shown up when we had.
It hadn't really occurred to me before how very, very alone Uncle Joe was up here. He caught sight of us racing toward him and raised a hand, smiling.
"Here comes the cavalry,"
he called as we approached.
"Don't worry, don't worry. I think I'm okay."
Abby and I pressed around him, offering hands and asking what had happened. He rested an arm on my shoulder, steadying himself as we inched back to the cabin.
"Just a twisted ankle,"
he said.
"I slipped getting out of the boat and went down like a giraffe on ice. Probably looked pretty funny, to tell you the truth."
"It's not funny at all," I insisted. "What if you were really hurt? What if the boat rolled over and crushed your foot? What if you broke your leg and got pulled into the water by the tide? You need to be more careful." Uncle Joe grinned.
"You sound just like your mom. She hasn't stopped worrying about me since the day I was born."
I stumbled on a loose rock, almost pulling him over. I sounded like my mom? Huh, that was new. Back in the cabin, Abby and I examined Uncle Joe's ankle, decided we had no idea what we were looking at, and settled for tucking him into bed while we heated up soup to go with the salad.
"Dude, we are doing good deeds galore," whispered Abby, arranging crackers on a paper plate. "Sprained ankle rescue? Good deed. Thoughtful salad bringing? Good deed. We'll be in the club in no time."
"We still haven't shown him the salad," I reminded her. "He might just close his eyes and put his fingers in his ears again."
But luckily, Uncle Joe didn't start la-lying when we shouted, "Surprise!" and brought the salad out of the kitchen.
He plowed his way through 3 helpings, plus 2 bowls of soup, and announced that all the fresh greens were making his ankle feel better already. I made up a batch of double-strength cocoa for dessert. Abby cleared away the dishes, and as heavy raindrops started lashing at the windows, Uncle Joe pulled a blanket over himself and fell fast asleep. With the cabin to ourselves and the whole afternoon stretching ahead, Abby and I resupplied on cocoa, settled in, and got to work brainstorming a backup list of more outstanding good deeds. Just to be prepared. Just in case.
"Will you show me what we've got?" I asked an hour or two later from the arm of the sofa.
Abby, sprawled on her back in the entrance to Fort Orpheus, heaved her pad of paper at me. I caught it and read, "Ideas for more good deeds. Cook surprise romantic dinner for Dad and Tamal. Help Joe with his sciencey science research. Details to be determined. Tune up the twins' bikes for them. Fill house with flowers as surprise for Maggie's mom. Find a cat friend for Samson. Surprise wash Caitlin's ice cream truck. Other." I smiled to myself. It wasn't much to show for an afternoon's work, but that was fine by me. I hadn't been trying all that hard. The rain was hammering against the window panes. The cabin was warm and cozy, and I was just enjoying hanging out with Abby, making plans.
"Okay, so hey," said Abby, running a finger down the list. "These are good, but I see problems with some of them."
"Like what?"
"Like, does either of us know how to cook a surprise romantic dinner?"
"Maybe," I said. I wasn't exactly a top chef, but I was used to eating by myself and could throw together a meal if I had to.
"Well, I definitely can't," said Abby.
"And my dad loves cooking, and he's particular about his kitchen. Everything has to be in a certain place, or he gets really frustrated. You know how he never lets us put the dishes away when we help wash them? He'd probably be in there with us the whole time, fussing."
"So, not really such a good deed, then?"
"Probably not," said Abby. She crossed off the first idea. "Next problem? Can you think of anything we could do today that would actually help Joe with his research?"
I thought. "We could carry his equipment, maybe, or steer the boat, or organize his recordings. But he could do any of that himself once his foot was better. And if bringing him greens and doing our best to fix his ankle didn't turn out to be enough, I was pretty certain none of that other stuff would be either."
No. One by one, we crossed off everything on the list, until Uncle Joe woke up with a snort, and we had to stop with the fort talk. Pretty soon, it was time to say goodbye, and I made Uncle Joe promise to stay off his foot and not go out researching for a while. He agreed,
But as Abby and I slipped into the fort, I couldn't shake a nagging prickle of worry about leaving him up there, injured and housebound and alone. Luckily, there were other things to think about as we got back to Seattle.
Did it work? Did it work? Asked Abby. Did we pass the test?
Look for a silver envelope, I said, peering around. But there was no sign of a silver envelope in Fort McFortersen or in Fort Comfy.
Cucumber casserole, said Abby. I was sure that would be enough.
Sorry, I said. It was a nice try, though, and at least we made Uncle Joe happy. And me, actually. That was the best afternoon I'd had in a long time. We ate dinner at Abby's again that night, black bean burgers and coleslaw. And after a push-up contest between Tamal and the twins, and a pile-up in the living room for the next superhero movie in the series, Abby and I headed for bed. I was curled in my usual spot, drowsily dreaming up an Arctic-themed sky-versus-ocean game for us to play, when Abby sat bolt upright in the darkness.
Oh, no, she said. We forgot to clean your house.
I groaned and threw my arms over my face. Ugh. But we folded the laundry, right? That was the main thing. My mom won't be mad if we do the rest of the house tomorrow.
But Abby was already out of bed and switching on the light. Dude, no, she said, her hands on her hips. I want to have tomorrow free for doing good deeds so we can make sure we get into Nafafa. And that means you need to get up right this second because tonight, we... She whacked me with her pillow. Are cleaning.
It definitely wasn't the best going over my house had ever seen. But between us, we rallied long enough to sweep the floors, polish the faucets, straighten the books, wipe the windows, and scrub the toothpaste out of the bathroom sink before deciding to call it quits.
Okay, for real, enough's enough, Abby said as I led the way back into Fort McFortersen. Your mom can't expect us to do more than that.
I hope not,
I yawned, closing my eyes as the end of my patchwork scarf brushed over my face. I stopped, wondering sleepily if I could spot the bit of first sofa in it.
Abby bumped into me head first from behind.
Oop, I said as she fell over, snort laughing.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that funny.
Abby rolled onto her back, sleepy giggling, and her arm thumped against a pillow, one to the right of the entrance. The pillow fell slowly forward. And another pillow, a brand new pillow, appeared behind it.
13. Hey, Abby said. New Link! And she was right. The off-white, industrial-looking pillow staring back at us was definitely a stranger to Fort McFortersen.
Ah, I said. Now? It's seriously too late for this.
This is awesome, said Abby, somehow completely awake again. New Link means new fort.
But where did it come from? She pushed the pillow aside. There was darkness behind it.
Only one way to find out. She started forward. Hang on, I said, throwing out an arm and blocking her path. Questions and dangers were swarming through my tired brain. What if this was a test set by the council? Or even a trap? Would using this new link disqualify us? Were we supposed to put the pillow back and just forget the link existed? Or were we supposed to explore it and use its powers for good? I couldn't decide. I couldn't hold Abby back forever, either.
Just be careful, I said, lowering my arm. Abby wrinkled her forehead.
Careful? Of what? And why are you always scared of new links?
I thought it might be a council trap, you know, to test us.
Huh? Said Abby. How do you figure that? We didn't add this link, so we can't get in trouble for it. It might have nothing to do with them anyway.
Then that's even worse, I said.
That means it's a stranger's fort, and that could mean a whole other kind of trouble. I mean,
I waved a hand at the unidentified darkness.
There could be anything in there.
Abby rolled her eyes.
Oh, come on, Mags, she said. This is a pillow fort. Not a long-lost portal in one of your games. We're not going to be facing giant spider crabs or hungry ghost badgers.
No mechanical librarians are going to kidnap me and hold me for ransom until you hand over a book from your mom's shelves that turns out to be a secret animal sound translator when you read it in a mirror on the night of a full moon. That's a normal-looking pillow right there, which means it must lead to a normal enough fort. So why don't we stop wasting time and go check it out? Oof. New Abby. She did have some surprisingly good game ideas, though. And it didn't sound like I'd be able to stop her from charging ahead. I sat back and shrugged. Thanks, said Abby. Can you get me some light? I passed her a flashlight from my supply corner and watched as she disappeared into the darkness. The seconds ticked by, but nothing happened. No cries for help, no council bursting in from every pillow, no explosion, no collapsing links. Were we okay then? I ran my mind over the council's lecture about their weird rules, and suddenly remembered the map of Camp Pillowfort they'd refused to let me see. Our network had made a strange shape on it, bumpier than it looked on our map. Was that because it showed this fort, too? A fort that was already linked in, but I just didn't know about it yet? If it had been here all along, it might be okay to use. A light hit my face from inside the new link.
Hey, Sleepy McTired Face, came Abby's whisper. Come on.
I sighed, pushed down my never-ending questions, and squeezed in after her. We were in a small, boxy fort, built around a folding table shoved into a corner. Pillows lined the walls on two sides, with a blanket hanging down to the floor on the others. The cold linoleum floor was littered with art supplies, and as Abby waved her flashlight, I saw colorful drawings taped to the underside of the table above our heads.
Good thing you were careful coming in, she whispered, or you might have been seriously injured on all these crayons and pieces of construction paper.
I ignored her.
It definitely looks like a little kid's fort, Abby went on, so that's okay. But how did it get linked in? Do you recognize anything?
I shook my head. Uncle Joe's made sense. But I didn't have the faintest idea how we could have gotten linked into some random little kid's fort. It felt totally creepy, sneaking around a stranger's space by flashlight. What if the owner turned up and found us? Or worse, what if they were sitting just outside, only inches away on the other side of the blanket, listening to our every word? And what was outside anyway? Sure, it looked all sweet and innocent in here, but that didn't prove anything. It could all be part of the trap. This fort could be set up in a pitch-black attic, or the musty basement of a haunted mansion, or a locked classroom in an abandoned boarding school. And when we crawled out, we would find our names scrawled on the chalkboard in jagged letters, waiting for us.
We'll have to go out there and look for clues, I said, shivering.
Agreed, said Abby. And it's your turn to go first, fearless leader. She pointed the flashlight at a crack in the blanket walls. Watch out for ghost badgers.
Oh, you are just hilarious tonight, I whispered.
Abby giggled. I took a deep, steadying breath, put my secret agent shoulders back, parted the sheets the tiniest bit, and looked out. We were in a hospital room. The walls were pale pastel green, and the cool air smelled like hand sanitizer and paper towels. The lights were turned off, but a computery glow came from a group of machines clustered around a bed on the opposite side of the room. And in the bed, fast asleep, was a small girl.
Oh, wow, said Abby, lying flat on her stomach and ducking her head under my arm.
I leaned on her shoulders. New Abby sure was a lot more cuddly than old Abby, and I had to admit, that part was nice. We both watched the girl sleep quietly.
She must be really sick, I said, scanning the room. Look at all those cards taped to the wall. She's been here a while.
There was a soft tap on the door, and it swung open. We scrambled back, killing the flashlight and hardly daring to breathe as someone came in. Footsteps crossed the floor toward the bed. There was a faint click, and one of the machines beeped.
What's that? Hey, Kelly, whispered a voice. Sorry I woke you. Go back to sleep.
I felt my hair stand on end. I knew that voice.
I opened the teeniest crack in the sheet and looked out. My mom was standing over the bed.
Deep, slow breaths, sweetie, she said to the girl named Kelly, and you'll be asleep before you know it. Then when you wake up, it'll be tomorrow, and you can play in your pillow fort again.
Will you be here?
My mom sat down on the edge of the bed and rested a hand on the little girl's shoulder. I'll always be right here when you need me, she said.
Okay,
murmured Kelly.
Good night, Dr. Hetzker.
Good night, whispered my mom. She waited until Kelly was asleep, then adjusted her blankets, scribbled something on a chart at the foot of the bed, and left, closing the door quietly behind her. I let out a breath. Wow, said Abby. That was weird. I didn't say a word. It was more than weird. My mom had just promised to be there for this total stranger whenever she needed her. This stranger who wasn't her family, who wasn't her daughter, who wasn't me. Something hot and spiky settled in my stomach. That girl's really sick then, isn't she? Said Abby. Since your mom's a cancer doctor? I nodded. We looked out at Kelly. She couldn't have been more than 8. And this is her fort, Abby said, shining the flashlight around again. She ran its beam along the pictures taped to the ceiling and smiled. Apparently, Kelly liked drawing 2 things, cats and space, mostly together. She was good, too. There were cats in spacesuits, cats on the moon, cats meeting aliens, cats pushing buttons in control rooms, and cats in rockets counting down to liftoff. The memory of saving Samson from the ice cream truck rocket ship floated through my mind, and I fought back a smile. These are adorable, said Abby. I bet she'd love Samson. And looked, crimped edges. She must have scissors like yours, Mags. She nudged me. You're kindred spirits. Ha, huh, I said. I bet she comes in here to pretend she's not in the hospital. It must get really old being sick. Abby flicked a crayon across the floor. Then her head snapped up. Hey! She batted me on the shoulder. We should fix it up for her. What? The fort, said Abby. We can give it a makeover. Bring her things to make it better. Make it fun. It can be a total magical surprise. Okay, I said. But, ow! Stop it! Why do you always hit people when you have an idea? And please stop calling the forts magical. We're not third graders here. What is this thing you have against third graders? Said Abby. But whatever, this is such a good idea. She'll love it. Plus, it's the perfect good deed. Win-win. I didn't answer. I scowled down at the linoleum. Hey, Abby said. What's up? Nothing, I said. Don't you think we've done enough good deeds for one night? I'm seriously tired here. Come on, said Abby. It'll be fun. And even forgetting the good deed, this is a nice thing to do. Don't you want to make a sick little kid happy? I knew the only answer to that was yes, but I couldn't say it. It wasn't like this Kelly person didn't have time to make her fort better herself. All she had to do was lie around all day while my mom took care of her. Okay, fine. That wasn't fair. But my stomach still felt hot and spiky, and I definitely wasn't in the mood to stay up late for the 2nd night in a row, doing a favor for someone I didn't even know. Abby was watching me, a line between her eyebrows getting deeper and deeper the longer I stayed quiet. I looked away, chewing the inside of my cheek. I wasn't going to win this one. Whatever, I said. Let's get this over with. Sweet! Come on, tired Maggie! Abby shook out her wrists and cracked her neck. So, what do we need? Or, more important, I guess, what can we get? What we got turned out to be a hodgepodge of odds and ends scavenged from our bedrooms and houses. Between us we found colorful fake flowers to jam between all the pillows, a squashy blue bath mat to spread over the cold floor, a string of paper butterflies, a round mirror with a broken frame, a useful stack of extra construction paper, an old wicker basket to hold Kelly's mess of art supplies, and a miniature tea party table that we decorated with a lime green dish towel, a pair of battery-operated candles, a chipped teacup, and a tiny owl wearing a hat. It was hard work crawling back and forth with our hands full, especially since we were trying to be quiet, and by the time we finished, even Abby was grumbling. Still, as we sat back to survey the final result, I couldn't help feeling a rush of pride at what we'd done. We'd transformed Kelly's boring everyday fort into a cozy palace, pretty and twinkling in the electric candlelight.
"Go us," said Abby, wiping her forehead.
"This is awesome! Kelly's going to be over the moon!" "Along with her cats," I said, nodding up at the drawings.
"Ha!" said Abby. "There's my girl back."
I flashed her a grin, then dropped it as a new worry suddenly occurred to me. What if Kelly wasn't over the moon? What if she got scared instead? What if we came back to visit and found her fort surrounded by police tape, with all those knickknacks covered in our fingerprints sealed up in plastic bags as evidence? If Kelly took the makeover the wrong way, we could be in serious, serious trouble.
"Calm down," said Abby when I pointed out the problem.
"It's okay. We can leave her a note. That way she'll know someone nice was behind everything." After carefully discussing how much to say, we wrote out the note. "Dear Kelly, surprise! We hope you like your fort makeover. We can't tell you who we are, but we have forts too, so we're kindred spirits. Your space cat pictures are awesome. Will you draw us one of a big black and white cat? We know a cat like that. His name is Samson. He hasn't been to outer space, but he likes to explore and go back and forth between our forts. We are so sorry you have to be in the hospital, and hope you get well very, very soon. From..."
"What should we put?"
asked Abby, tapping the pen on her leg.
"A and M?"
"Your 40 godmothers?" I suggested. "How about your next fort neighbors?" said Abby. "That works." Abby folded up the letter and tucked it under a candle on the little table.
"Okay, that's that," she said, rubbing her eyes. "Guess all we can do now is wait to see if she likes it. But hey," she bopped me on the knee, "at least now we can be absolutely for sure certain we're in Nefafa. If thoughtful greens, ankle fixing, house cleaning, and heroic fort fancying don't get us in, nothing will."
She yawned, then I yawned, then both of us yawned, and we made our last trip home for the night. Abby went back to her place, but I decided I needed a change after the long day and crawled up onto my old sofa bunk in Fort McForterson. It was glorious getting to stretch out in my own space again, and I realized being on my own didn't bother me at all now that my best friend was right on the other side of the pillow. Besides, I thought as I finally drifted off to sleep, Abby was right. There was no way we weren't in Nefafa now. All the hard work was behind us, and from here on out, things could only get easier. 14. I woke the next morning to the blare of my house phone ringing in the kitchen. I crawled out of the fort and shuffled over to answer it.
"Hello," I said, staring blearily at the stove clock. It read 8:05 a.m.
"Maggles, it's Abby." My brain gave a hiccup. That didn't compute. Why would Abby call me on the house phone? It would have been faster to just reach through the forts and poke me.
"Who?"
"Abby, your best friend and next-door neighbor? Listen, we've got trouble." My brain hiccuped again, slowly coming online.
"Huh? What sort of trouble?"
"Well, for starters, I'm grounded." My brain thudded into gear.
"Grounded? What for?"
"My dad woke me up a bit ago, kind of very angry," she said. There was a quaver in her voice. It took a lot to upset Abby. "He asked me to come look at something in the kitchen, and it was a total mess. Everything in the cupboards was switched around, and the mugs were under the stove, and the pots and pans were in the freezer, and there were dirty fingerprints on the walls, and all the forks and knives were hidden in the orange juice carton. It was chaos."
"What?"
"And Mags, he thinks we did it. He said he heard us sneaking around last night and just assumed we were playing a game.
But if this is our idea of a practical joke, it's going too far. I told him it wasn't us, but he asked me who it was then, and I couldn't think of anything to say, so now I'm grounded.
She let out a shaky breath.
It was Nefaffa, wasn't it, Mags? They attacked. I nodded, forgetting she couldn't see me. It must have been. There's no other explanation, but why? I don't know. This is all just really messed up. Is everything okay at your place? I looked around the kitchen and what I could see of the living room. Everything looked normal, except...
Wait. We'd totally straightened all those lopsided books.
And where did that dirt on the floor come from? And the smears on the windows? You'd never know Abby and I had cleaned at all.
I caught sight of a folded piece of paper propped on the stove, my name on the front in all caps. My stomach dropped.
Maybe not. Can you hang on a second?
I opened the note and skimmed it, my stomach sinking further and further with every line.
Okay, more bad news, I said, getting back on the phone. I'm grounded, too. My mom left a note saying the house was a wreck when she got home late last night. She says it looked like we did our best to unclean everything. And if we think tying all the laundry in knots and shoving it under her bed was a funny joke, then we have some serious growing up to do.
They undid all our cleaning? And the laundry folding? Said Abby. That's horrible. And, dude, that means they were listening when we brainstormed up in Alaska. Remember I said my dad was picky about his kitchen? That must be where they got the idea. They did all this on purpose just to get us in trouble.
And it worked, I said grimly. My mom says she cleaned up most of the mess before going back to the hospital, but we're going to have a very serious talk as soon as she gets home. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mags. I'll survive. My mom never has time to give really bad lectures.
Well, I feel completely awful, said Abby.
I can't stand my dad being mad at me. How are we going to fix this? We need to come up with a plan. Say you're going to your room and meet me in my fort.
I hung up the phone and read through my mom's note again. It was an Nefaffa attack for sure, but why? Why undo all our hard work and frame us for it too, when we'd just spent an entire day doing good deeds? I flipped over the note and found a P.S. on the back. By the way, I found the good flashlight in your pillow fort. Please stop taking things from around the house and hiding them in there. The other day I spent 20 minutes trying to find a pair of scissors that should have been in the kitchen, and by the time I found them behind your postcard box, I was almost late for work. Try to be a good housemate and show a little more respect for my belongings.
Oof. By my mom's standards, that was practically yelling. But there was something else in there. Something that nagged at me, apart from my mom. I read through the P.S. again. It seemed normal enough, but I couldn't shake the feeling I was missing something important. There was another surprise waiting for me when I reached Fort McForderson. A shiny silver envelope with my name on the front. Abby linked over just as I was opening it. She looked miserable.
Hey, she said, is that from the council?
I nodded. They must have left it while we were on the phone.
Let me see.
We put our heads together and read.
To Maggie Hetzker, Vice Director, Camp Pillow Fort. From the Council of Nefaffa. This is your official notification of censure from the Council of Nefaffa. As an applicant for membership in our organization, you are provided with certain regulations and guidelines to follow. Below is a list of the rules, regulations, and guidelines you have been found to have violated. 1. Adding new forts to your network. Location, Greenway Children's Hospital. Builder name, Kelly. Age, 8. Approved? No. Addendum. Certain council members want to clarify that the council is aware the link to Kelly's was created accidentally and is therefore not technically a violation. Others, however, believe that upon discovering a new link while under consideration for membership, you should have voluntarily ignored it until membership was granted, thereby respecting the spirit of the law as well as the letter. 2. Telling anyone not already involved about Fort Network, Networks. Location, Greenway Children's Hospital. Name, Kelly. Age, 8. Approved, no.
Addendum.
Council not unanimous on this point either. Some of us believe performing an otherwise inexplicable makeover on a fort is the same as telling about the network. Others do not. The letter written by Abby Hernandez added weight to the argument for censure, dealing as it did with fort access and manipulation. And in the end, we decided to note the violation. While Kelly may not know the hows and whys of what has happened to her fort, she is sure to understand that something out of the ordinary is going on with it, something she would not have been aware of without your actions or your letter. Due to these somewhat unclear violations, an appropriately calibrated reprimand has been carried out. You have been warned. Another violation of our regulations and guidelines will result in a full-scale attack. You are now officially on probation. Remember, there are just under 2 days remaining for you to fulfill your obligations and perform a good deed up to NFAFA standards, or your application for membership will be rejected and your network permanently terminated. Have a nice day. Sincerely, the Council of NFAFA. I bet you anything Ben wrote that, I said, glaring at the note. Dude, said Abby, that is some serious cucumber casserole right there. I did not tell Kelly too much in the note. I barely told her anything. And what do they mean about her link being accidentally created? I have a guess about that. My brain had finally put two and two together, and I was pretty sure I was right. Remember how you said Kelly and I were kindred spirits because we both owned crimping scissors? Yeah. I think it was actually the same pair. Huh? Explain, please. I showed her the P.S. in my mom's note. I think she meant her crimping scissors, I said. And I think she took them to work and gave them to Kelly for her arts and crafts. So your mom was the one who added the new fort, said Abby slowly. And we're the ones who got in trouble for it? Kind of makes you want to scream, doesn't it? I said. Of course it does, said Abby. We did tons of good deeds yesterday, and we made a sick kid really happy, and those council kids still attacked us. I've never been in trouble like this before. How am I going to... But she was interrupted, as one of the wall pillows came flying into the fort, and a kid in silver sunglasses appeared in its place. I felt my mouth fall open. It was Noriko. 15. Hey, what? I said, just as Abby said, Dude, who? Noriko gave us a short nod.
Hello again, Maggie Hetzker, she said. And hello, Abby Hernandez. My name is Noriko. I'm head of the Council of NFAFA and Chancellor of the Forts of the Eastern Seaboard.
Abby gaped at her. You're one of the ones who sent the letter.
Noriko nodded again, making her earrings, dangly silver penguins this time, dance in the lamplight. There was a pause.
And then Abby and I both started shouting at once. Totally outrageous! Poor little kid! And your sunglasses, too?
I am here, said Noriko, raising a hand and speaking over us, to make sure you received your letter of reprimand and understand the contents.
We were both telling her exactly what we thought of her letter of reprimand,
when Noriko put a finger to her lips in a shh signal, pulled a slip of paper from her pocket, and held it out.
Abby and I stopped shouting, our voices trailing off. I took the paper.
I know our policies at NFAFA can be very hard for novices such as yourselves to understand, Noriko said as though nothing had happened. And as head of the council, it's my duty to make sure we're communicating with you effectively. An uncertain network does no one any favors.
She nodded meaningfully at the paper. I unfolded it, and Abby crowded around to read. Hi. Ask me to show you the collecting room Murray told you about. Act natural. We looked up at her.
So, do you have any questions you'd like to ask? Noriko said deliberately.
I blinked. Abby nudged me. Oh, okay, yes. I glanced back at the note.
I was wondering if you would show us that collecting room Marie told me about, the one where all the coins go. Or that's what he told me, when Marie told me about the room. Anyway, could we see it?
I hoped that counted as acting natural. Noriko smiled and gave a thumbs up.
What a strange request, she said loudly. But I suppose it would be all right. Follow me.
She backed out of the link, and Abby and I crawled after her into the hub. Abby didn't have to try acting natural when she stood up and looked around. Her reaction was perfect. She gaped at the mammoth patchwork ceiling, the maze of sofas and shelves, the curving pillow wall, and the gleaming chandelier. Noriko led the way along the wall to the left, and I followed behind, trying not to show how much I was enjoying watching Abby gawk and stare. It was busier in the hub than it had been during my midnight visit. The place was packed. A group of girls ran through the crowd just ahead of us, playing what looked like some kind of badminton tag. One aisle over, a circle of older-looking kids holding scripts was acting out a play, complete with dramatic crying and bad British accents. A paper airplane arced over a cluster of forts made of beach umbrellas and neon pink towels, and a hand reached out of the forts and caught it. A moment later, there was a shout of laughter, and a plastic soda bottle with a roll of paper inside went flying back the other way, just missing a line of boys in hockey jerseys fencing with foam pool noodles. Abby fell back and grabbed my arm. Mags, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my whole life! Look at all these kids we get to meet! Suddenly, the badminton birdie whizzed by out of nowhere, landing with a plonk a few feet from us, and the girls with rackets burst out of the fort maze in hot pursuit. Abby got there first, scooped it up, and ran down to hand it over. I watched, impressed at her courage. These girls were total strangers. One of them said something as she took back the birdie. Then Abby said something, raising both hands, and next second the whole group was laughing. A tall girl with braces held out her racket and pointed to the maze, clearly inviting Abby to join them, and I went from being impressed to being flat-out astonished. Seriously, how did Abby do that? Abby shook her head, smiling, and trotted back to me.
This place is so great, she said, turning and waving at the badminton girls. They waved back.
I hesitated, then gathered my courage and waved too, but they were disappearing into the maze and didn't see. I looked around to find Abby and Noriko already several pillows away. I had to jog to catch up. At last, we reached the enormous pillow with the metallic clinking sounds behind it, and Noriko stopped and faced us. Just down the wall, a round pillow covered in clear plastic swung open, and a boy wearing swimming goggles and a tank top stepped into the hub. He was covered from the waist down in thick soap bubbles. Abby giggled.
Hey, ma'am,
the boy called, waving at Noriko.
Hi, Connor,
she said. How was the match? Are you still undefeated? Connor grinned and gave a double thumbs up, then strutted out onto the main floor, where he was immediately hit by a badminton birdie.
Okay, Noriko said, turning to us again. Business, Maggie Hetzker. What did Murray tell you about this room?
She put a hand on the massive pillow door. I pulled my question-packed brain back to what we were doing. The hub was very distracting.
He told me this is where you collect all the coins that fall down the back of the sofas, I said.
Basically correct, said Noriko,
which means the room is a little noisy. Get ready.
She gave a push, and the pillow swung open, releasing a solid wall of sound. We followed her inside. It was like stepping into the engine room of one of Kelly's spaceships. A forest of gleaming metal tubes stretched far overhead and descended in a tangle through a metal grating floor at our feet. The noise coming from them was incredible. An echoing roar of clinking, clanking, plinking, banging, and clanging. Noriko led the way through the maze of twisting pipes to a wide hole in the floor with a railing around it. Below us, the tubes were spilling out a steady stream of shining coins into huge vats. We all put our elbows on the railing and leaned over to look.
So, said Noriko, shouting over the noise, I've asked you here today because this is the only place I can speak freely without potentially being overheard.
Abby and I exchanged a look.
This isn't about coin collecting, then?
I asked.
No, that part's pretty obvious, I think.
She gestured to the vats below.
This is a much bigger issue.
Ooh, said Abby. Intrigue.
First of all, said Narik